The New South Wales government has announced plans to subject music festivals to licensing restrictions in an attempt to curb deaths from drug overdoses. A series of overdoses at festivals has prompted calls for pill testing at music festivals in Victoria and New South Wales, but both state governments have rejected the idea. New South Wales Greens MP Kate Fairman has opened up about her own ecstasy use to change the conversation around pill testing. Senator Richard Di Natale is, of course, the Greens leader and joins us now. Welcome to the program.
G'day, Patricia. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Controversial first question. Have you ever taken ecstasy or any other illegal drugs?
Patricia, my history of drug use is pretty boring. I've used cannabis. I haven't used anything else. But, well, that's not true. I've used lots of drugs. I use caffeine.
Panadol.
But I had an anti-inflammatory.
You haven't tried ecstasy.
I've had a prescription opiate for when I had a operation for my knee. I think we've got to get away from this really simplistic discussion around drug use and have a much more, and I know it's always good to try and catch pollies out.
I'm not trying to catch
you out.
I'll
probably lose a few votes, by the way, for my history of drug use.
I suppose given one of your former chief of staff, who is Kate Fairman, has come out and
right.
said this.
It may not be my political interest to admit my history's not as colourful as many others, but the bottom line is almost half of people my age have used a drug. Many people right across Australia use drugs. They use legal drugs. They use illicit drugs. And it doesn't matter what you or me or the Premier of New South Wales or anyone else says about it. They'll continue to do it. They do it, as Kate said, because they actually derive pleasure out of it. And that's the thing you can't say. And it's the unspoken truth about drug use is that most people will use a drug like ecstasy occasionally. They'll enjoy it. And they won't suffer any ill effects. That's why people continue to do it.
But don't you normalise it given the high risks when we talk
like that? It already
is
normal, Patricia. And like, I come at this as somebody before doing this job who worked as a drug and alcohol doctor. So I don't come at it from some starry-eyed viewpoint that says drug use is a cost-free exercise. Some people get into serious trouble. Some people become addicted. Some people die from their drug use. That's the reality. But it's happening. It's happening. We can put our head in the sand or we can actually have an honest conversation about what we should do.
And you've been claiming that pill testing will end deaths. It won't, will it?
Nothing will end deaths. I mean, we're going to still see people die from Panadol overdoses. I treated people who overdosed from Panadol.
Let's talk specifically about illicit drug use.
So when it comes to...
It won't prevent
all deaths, but it will reduce the number of people who are dying. It might mean that a mother, a father, a brother or a sister doesn't get a phone call at 4 o'clock in the morning from a police officer telling them that their child has died. That's what it can mean. Nothing will stop people using drugs and nothing will stop some people from having a harmful side effect and, worst case scenario, dying from drug use. But what we can do is reduce the harms. We can reduce the deaths. And pill testing does that. It does that because the individual who tests that pill, we know this from where it's been introduced overseas, will bin it if they're told there's something dodgy in it. And that information gets out there to the other people who would have used that drug, and they won't use it either. At the moment, what we're doing is we're actually creating riskier behaviour. When you have sniffer dogs outside a festival, young people panic. And instead of taking half an ecstasy tablet, which is what they might have done, they might have a couple in their pocket, one they were going to give to a friend. They take them both. They take two or three at once because they don't want to be caught by the sniffer dogs, and they die from it.
On the program last night, I spoke to a couple of experts on the issue of pill testing. Here's Andrew Leiby, a forensic toxicologist from Safe Work Laboratories.
I do think there is an expectation in the community that there is the ability to very accurately and reliably test on site at a music festival exactly what's in these various pills. And unfortunately, we don't have the technology to say with a high degree of confidence what's actually in your pill.
He says a proper test would take 3 days to produce a result. Is there a danger that pill testing gives people a false sense of confidence and security?
No, not at all, and for a number of reasons. One is the message we're sending simply by having health professionals and laboratory equipment on site is, if you're going to do this stuff, you've got to know it's dangerous. That's the reason we're testing it, because what you're actually taking potentially could kill you. It sends the opposite message to the message the Premier says it sends.
Apart from when it allegedly doesn't find this and
no,
it says, what, hey, go ahead,
because
go crazy.
The first message, no, but that's not what happens. The first message that's communicated to somebody is, we can't guarantee this is safe. The only way we can guarantee you'll be safe is by not taking it. That's the first thing that someone hears.
If you're just tuning in, this is RN Drive. I'm Patricia Carvalis and my guest is Greens leader Richard Di Natale. On another topic, the Agriculture Department is investigating an anonymous map of farms and abattoirs posted by animal activist group Aussie Farms. Are you comfortable with the actions of this group?
Oh, well, I think it's important that we highlight wherever we can where there are instances of animal cruelty, and I think that's an important thing to do. And we know from past experience that groups like Animals of Australia have exposed animal cruelty. We saw that with the live animal export trade and actually changed the national conversation in this country, and they're to be commended for it.
Okay. Do you think this is appropriate?
Well, with regards to this specific instance, you know, we've got to be very careful that the information that's circulated is accurate, and I think we've got to be very careful that we don't identify wrongly people who are doing the right thing.
Here's National Farmers Federation President Fiona Simpson speaking to Frank Kelly on RN Breakfast this morning.
By actually putting online people's private details, by exposing people to anybody who wants to look it up online, who knows what sort of views people have that are looking at those things and what sort of thoughts people have that are looking at these details and where those thoughts might go. And I think that is the danger and that is the risk. We are crossing a line here.
Do you agree this presents a security risk for farmers who, by and large, are, you know, probably doing the right thing? We don't know, obviously.
Well, we don't know. And I think that it's really important to make sure the information is entirely accurate.
And you can't be sure then.
I don't speak for the group. I've got no knowledge about the information that they're publishing.
But there is a risk of vigilantes attacking people. I mean, is that something that could happen that you think could happen, as Fiona Simpson outlined this morning?
Potentially, it's a risk, and I'm sure that the groups involved are very aware that the information that they publish has to be absolutely accurate.
The federal government is providing funding for a replica of Captain Cook's ship, the Endeavour, to circumnavigate Australia to mark 250 years since Captain Cook's arrival. Captain Cook didn't actually circumnavigate Australia, but obviously it's a broader kind of commemoration beyond that. Is it a good idea?
I'd rather the money be spent on investing in closing the gap in life expectancy between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. I mean,
I mean, we, you know, talk about our history.
I haven't seen what the cost of this exercise will be, and obviously the Prime Minister is very keen to engage in another culture war. It's why he made the decision a few weeks ago to instruct councils to conduct citizenship ceremonies on Australia Day and enforce a dress code. I mean, this is the party of free speech, of course. That suits them when it's in their own interests. The reality is that we do have to come to terms with our past, and coming to terms with our past is acknowledging the truth of Australia's foundation story, which was based on an act of dispossession and theft. It triggered a genocide. We saw frontier wars, people were massacred, and children were taken away from their families. And that's part of our history.
It is part of our history. And Prime Minister Scott Morrison says it's important for Australia not to crab walk away from its history. He says this provides an opportunity for reconciliation and an insight into the Indigenous experience. He says this process is also about what Indigenous people saw as well. Does he have a point? Is it not a full story?
Well, I don't know what he's got planned, but if he was genuine about ensuring that we acknowledge the truth of our past, coming to terms with it and healing as a nation, because we've got so much unfinished business, then I think he would change the day we celebrate our national holiday. He would recognise that it does, for many people, represent a day of hurt and suffering, a day of pain. And he would begin a genuine conversation about bringing the country together over something that genuinely united the nation. I'd love it to happen on a day that we signed treaties with Aboriginal people.
Do you accept, though, that the majority of Australians just don't agree with your perspective?
Oh, it's clear that at this stage, most Australians, when confronted with a very simple question, will say, no, we don't want a holiday change. But when you actually say, well, you know what, it's only been a national holiday for a little more than 20 years, the reality is this is a day that represents pain and suffering for our First Nations peoples, Australians actually take a different view. And as long as we have a day to celebrate our national holiday, and there are many great things about being Australian. You know, I'm a proud product of that great experiment called multiculturalism. We both are, Patricia, and it's a great success story. We've made a huge contribution internationally across so many areas, science, literature, sport, the arts. We've got a lot to be proud of, but we also have this truth that we need to acknowledge. And unless we acknowledge the truth of our history, we won't move on from it. And of course, we've got to do more than that. Changing the date's only one part of a much bigger story about how we ensure that we make peace, we address our unfinished business, treaties, sovereignty, a strong Aboriginal voice in our parliament, a big investment in closing the gap. You know, if you're Aboriginal in this country, you die younger, you live sicker, you're more likely to be incarcerated. You know, having worked in Aboriginal communities as a doctor, you see young kids come in with things like rheumatic heart disease. Now I learn about that in textbooks. I didn't think we had rheumatic heart disease in Australia. It exists in third world countries, in developing countries. And yet, that's the reality for many Aboriginal people. And if we're going to make progress, if we're going to move on and be a nation that can realise its potential, then we have to engage with our past, we have to acknowledge it, and we have to do all those things that help us move the country together forward.
Look, a political question now, but there, I suppose, is a connection, because it seems that the Liberal Party and the Prime Minister has intervened to ensure that Warren Mundine, who was, of course, a high-profile Indigenous figure in this country, will contest the seat of Gilmore for the government, for the Liberal Party. What do you make of that decision?
Oh, well, I just heard that now, Patricia. I wasn't aware of that. So he was a Labor Party, former Labor Party president.
Yeah. And he's now had a bit of a journey.
Okay, well, that's some journey. I'd be very disappointed if I was a member of the Labor Party. Indeed, I think most Australians would be disappointed that a man with his history has made the decision he has.
You welcome more Indigenous Australians in the Parliament?
Oh, of course I do. And it's a good thing to have a diversity of voices, and we do need more Indigenous representation. But I'd much rather see the likes of some of the Indigenous representatives we've got in the progressive side of politics. We obviously lost Lydia Thorpe, which was a great loss to the Victorian Parliament. We've got some very strong Indigenous representatives within the federal parliament across both sides of the political divide. And, you know, with Senator Dodson right through to Mr. White on the Conservative side, who have been great additions to the parliament.
Mundine wouldn't be a good addition to the parliament?
Well, let me just say that the views that Warren's expressed are on many, many issues are not the views that I share.
Richard Di Natale, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure.